better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
If you want to get on the conversation, you can call or text the Cherokee Casino Hotline at 877-377-6963. Guys, I know we're going to talk a lot about Razorback football and maybe some Razorback basketball, and then we'll get into some rivalry week games and all that. But I feel like we would be remiss if we did not talk about this game last night in the Egg Bowl. The Mississippi State Ole Miss game, which, you know, it's Mississippi State gets the victory 21-20. Ole Miss falls to 4-8. It's their worst record since Houston Nutt's last year back in 2011. Mississippi State does become bowl eligible at 6-6, and it's kind of a weird rivalry game, especially because these two teams. It's like it is a rivalry game. People will watch it. But from here on out, I just don't see this usually having a game of consequence as far as, okay, well, this whoever wins this is going to go to the SEC West or win the SEC West and go to the SEC Championship. I don't see it's that game. But last night, it was incredible because this was in Starkville, and Mississippi State got up 14-0 early. Ole Miss storms back, ties it up at 14 at halftime. And then you have Mississippi State score a touchdown in the third quarter. So it was kind of just a low-scoring game, a low-scoring affair, but always within striking distance. Well, then at the end of the game, with literally 4 seconds left, Ole Miss gets a touchdown to tie it up. And we're like, yes, it's going to go to overtime. Until that individual who scored the touchdown, which was Elijah Moore, was penalized with an unsportsmanlike penalty, not for spiking the ball, not for, taunting the crowd or anything like that. He got penalized for bear crawling into the end zone and lifting his leg like a dog to simulate him urinating in the end zone.
towards the student section.
Yeah, towards the student section. I mean, it was awful. And so he does that.
Oh, it wasn't awful. It was glorious.
Wonderful. He does that. He gets penalized, which, Tommy, I know that you probably would have thrown a flag there, too.
Well, that's easy. I mean, that flag throws itself. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He gets penalized. And then that happens. And so that backs them up on the extra point, of course, 15 yards. And just like in perfect college football karma, he misses the extra point. And Mississippi State wins 21-20.
Clay, that was the best thing I've seen in college football this year.
Well,
it's better than Joe Burrow. It's better than anything.
I wanted the official to go over with the flag and wipe up the spot.
That'd have been even better.
That would have been better. Yeah, it's like, gotta clean that spot. it was really. But I mean, it's like that. You get what you deserve, right?
Yeah, they pissed the game away. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
I mean, it was amazing to see the reactions and all the course the puns and the jokes that were made from that. But if there was any,
it was made for Twitter. That ending was made for Twitter, boys.
Yeah, exactly right. And if there was any way for that game to end, I mean, there was just no other way for it to end that way. It had to end with something stupid like that. And I don't know what's Matt Luke's situation. I don't even know. I can't. And I couldn't believe
he's pissed
that,
off this morning. I guarantee you.
But that's the thing. That's the thing too. Is that he not only did Matt Luke, have a player that did that, but then he allowed that player to get back on the field for the hands team for the onside kick, and I just couldn't imagine letting that player. I would just send him straight to the locker room, of course, but if I was Matt Luke. But then at the same time, it didn't really matter in the end.
You don't send him to the locker room. You send him to the bathroom.
Yeah.
This is the same guy, though, that earlier in the game caught a punt and then waved his hand for fair catch before he got hammered.
He did.
You know, you can't call a fair catch after you've caught it. So
Well, you can do it. It just doesn't count.
Right. Well, I mean, exactly. But this guy had a couple of boneheaded plays in the game.
Yeah, and then he asked the referee, he said, "Did you see me?" "Yeah, I saw you all right." He said, "You did wave your hand a little late."
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that it's rivalry week, and I know that, there is some history, of course, with this particular celebration. But it's just, if there was any, perfect perfect way for Ole Miss to end their season and to end that game. And for this game to end, it was just that. So, I mean, we had to talk about that and just how the amount of craziness that happened with it. And I'm hoping that's a great kickoff to Rivalry Week and some of the great games that's going to be going on all weekend long. I don't know necessarily if the Arkansas-Missouri game is going to be one that's considered one of the great rivalry weeks of or one of the great games of rivalry weeks. But hopefully that's an indication of things to come. And who knows, maybe something crazy like that will happen in the Arkansas game.
You know, it's one thing to do that if your team's up two or three touchdowns and the game's over. It's still unsporting, but it, you know, I can understand why a player would want to go there. But when you're when the game's in doubt and your team's still got to make an extra point, that's just not thinking. I mean, just and Clay, I'm sure that there will be coaches around the country that use that as an example that in rivalry games today that, hey, keep your head about you because this guy cost his team. And, you know, who knows, maybe it cost his coaching staff something down the road as well.
I don't think anybody's going to talk about that too much, Tommy. I think everybody knows it. I mean, that's one of those understood, don't do this. Well, gosh, let me figure this one out. You don't do that?
Yeah, I mean, but,
really?
But I'm telling you.
It's like, how long do you think it took him to plan that while he was running? I mean, it's just like, you think that the whole team, you know, is like, all right, if anybody scores in the second half, this is what we're going to do. You know, I don't know. Unsportsmanlike is not really a strong enough penalty for that.
No.
They
got the penalty they deserved, which was missing the extra point. The penalty they deserved was losing the game because of it, and that's exactly what they got.
Well, I mean, to me, that should have been an ejection. You know, I mean, it's just like that. It's just really awful. But, you know, it's like you can send him to the dressing room right there if you want to.
Yeah.
And what you said, Tommy, or maybe it was John, Matt Luke, how's he putting him back on the field?
Yeah.
I that's the thing I didn't understand.
Matt Luke was probably in shock.
Yeah.
What just happened here?
I mean, because, yeah, it was extremely shocking for everybody to watch that because, you know, that should be the point where, and I know that, you know, anything can happen on an extra point or whatnot, but, you know, you would just be hard-pressed to think that he does miss that extra point too, even if it was without the penalty. So, you know, and who knows what happens in overtime. They might have still lost in overtime. But still, it was just having the opportunity to at least play on.
It was great theater. It was wonderful theater.
Oh, yeah. It was insane. It was absolutely insane. And it was so amazing.
As long as it's not your team, it's wonderful to watch.
Exactly. And as long as it's some other SEC West Division rivals teams that don't impact you or anything like that. Yeah. It's like, hey, listen, Arkansas's had plenty of embarrassing moments this season and last season and the year before. They've had plenty of those. It's kind of nice to see somebody else over there have an embarrassing and just complete choke job of a moment like Ole Miss did in that too. So, but man, that's going to be something that we will remember for years to come.
It replaces vodka water girl.
Oh man, it may replace a lot of things with Ole Miss as far as their viral moments and everything. So, but hopefully
the sad thing is the team that did that is one that beat you pretty handily early in the year. So,
I mean, everybody.
One of their four wins was against our team.
Yeah. Oh, I know, and that's why it's really crazy to think that, you know, Matt Luke is going to be back next year because it seems like the administration and everybody was very, very solid on him coming back next year. And, you know, I know Ole Miss fans aren't going to be happy with it, and a lot of Ole Miss fans are screaming for his head and all of that. But geez, it's just. What a weird ending to the game. Like I never dreamed in a million years that would be an actual thing that would happen in a college football game of significance, at least in the Power Five.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Hey, if you have experience transporting frozen and refrigerated goods and you want to be a part of the trucking family with insurance and be home every week, you need to contact Brent Higgins Trucking. They've been doing it since 1997. They're located in Mulberry, but they proudly deliver to and from various areas of the United States, including but not limited to Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. Call Brent Higgins Trucking. We're your name, not just a number, 479-997-2366, or apply online for one of their great open jobs at BrentHigginsTrucking.com.
So, obviously, with that game being concluded, it didn't have any weighted significance or anything like that as far as the SEC West goes in this conference. But, again, there's going to be a lot of rivalry games this week. You know, we talked about the Iron Bowl, and I still will watch the Iron Bowl between Alabama and Auburn. I still will have interest in it, but it's still not going to have the winner goes on to the SEC championship field. So is there a particular rivalry game that you guys are looking forward to the most? Is there any of them where you look at and you're like, okay, since this game has so much reason behind it and has a consequence to it, is there any game like that? Because it just feels like this year the rivalry games will be interesting just because they're rivals, not because of what could happen after the fact, depending on who the team ends up winning.
I don't really think that Texas A&M LSU is a rivalry game yet, but they had that massive overtime game last year. And LSU has so much riding on this game that, I guess that they could still, they're still going to go to the SEC championship game, and they're still, they could play their way into the championship with a victory there over Georgia. But that's the game that I want to watch just because it was so entertaining last year. Mm-hmm. And I probably will watch Michigan-Ohio State, because there are a lot of ramifications there. And I suspect that Michigan can beat Ohio State. That's the reason why I think it's interesting. And it's a game early in the day. I guess that's the first one, right? It's 11 o'clock game, which is weird to be playing that game at that time. But I guess they didn't want to go against the Auburn Alabama game they don't want to play opposite that because they know their ratings will be bad.
And it's cold up there later in the day. A lot of times
it's cold. It's cold no matter when you play that one.
But at night it's even worse. So but you're right. You think a game of that magnitude would be at 6 or 7 o'clock at night. So.
Well, and that's the thing is that game is always like, I guess if you had to look at one of the oldest, most iconic college football rivalry games, it is Ohio State and Michigan as far as the ways that it's dated back. But here's what I'm hoping, guys, and this could totally happen. This could absolutely happen where, maybe like Georgia Tech, for instance. If Georgia wins that game, which they should, Georgia Tech's 3-8. They're not a good team. So if Georgia wins that game, it ain't nothing. But what if Georgia Tech wins? Then that just completely throws a wrench in Georgia's side. Yep. They can no longer play for the national championship. Like, their national championship's hopes are dashed.
Well, South Carolina beats Clemson. Probably
another one, too.
Does them in,
Yeah. Yeah, you have that game. Of course, you mentioned Texas A&M LSU there, Clay. What if Texas A&M beats LSU?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. But LSU still has the championship game. They would probably, as a one-loss team, they would probably still get in, I think. It's up for debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you still have teams like an Oklahoma who's only got one loss that's still trying to find a way in there. You still got Alabama, a team with only one loss that would still try to find a way in there. So that would be, I guess, the fearful thing. And because I don't think that, if LSU lost A&M and still won the SEC championship, they'd leave them out because they're the SEC champion. So I still don't think that would be the case. But you would certainly have a lot more teams that would be feeling like they have a say or should have a say in them getting into the college football playoff because they only have one loss, just like many other teams. And so it would be great for us. It'd be great to talk about, but that would also be a nightmare for the college football playoff committee if they're sitting around looking around and all they have is a bunch of one-loss teams that they have to decide, all right, well, who's the best one-loss teams of these 8 or 9 different teams that are trying to get in?
Yeah. Even got Virginia Tech that play. And the Virginia Tech's got to win that to win the Coastal and to play Clemson. So, I mean, that could indirectly affect things based on Clemson perhaps getting beat down the road.
Yeah, that's another game, too. So, I mean, there's a few games that are going to be going on this weekend, of course, that are going to have significance and that are going to have a lot of people's interest. It's just unfortunate for in the SEC specifically that the championship games have been set or the championship game set. It's going to be LSU, and it's going to be Georgia. And, maybe, I guess, Georgia, that's would be a bad deal, is that if they lose to Georgia Tech, which, again, I don't think is going to happen. But that's not must-watch TV, I don't think, unless you're scrolling on Twitter and then you see, hey, Georgia
upset
Tech's
alert.
Down. Yeah. Yeah, upset alert, and then you flip it over there. That would probably be the only reason why many people would watch this game. But
I hope there are some, because I would like to see anything to throw some chaos in there, and we could ultimately end up with 8 teams. Yeah. Not this year, of course, but I mean, it's like, I think it's coming. I mean, it's you see everybody changing their schedule, their long-term schedule to play 2 Power 5 conference games. There's more and more teams that are doing that. you know, 5 years from now, their schedules are starting to change. And I think it's because they know that the 8-team and then strength of schedule in an 8-team playoff is just the absolute thing that would get you in.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everyone's wanting to do. If you don't have 9 conference games, play 2, because you want to have 10 quality games on your schedule to present to the committee. And that's, you know, I think the committee takes some weight with that when you've got 10 quality games on your schedule. So, yeah, it matters. And I think that's why eventually, as these TV contracts come due, you'll see leagues like the SEC at least consider moving to 9 conference games like some of the other leagues have done to scoop up the money and to make your leagues more competitive and easier for your teams to schedule, Clay.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what they've been pushing for at Alabama, and I think the rest of the league is slowly coming around.
Probably it's 9's not an even number. That's the hard part.
So. Yeah, and I think Arkansas, with what happened with Michigan, you know, basically giving them the shaft 3 years ago and pulling out and paying the guarantee, it's like, all right, that's we need to get to a situation 9 games so that we don't have to worry about a non-conference opponent doing that to us. And you have no recourse. They paid the guarantee, and you know, then you're stuck with Colorado State.
Brought to you by Kevin Hickey Law Partners. If you're facing divorce or a child custody issue, maybe a DHS or criminal matter, that can be hard to take and hard to deal with, particularly here at the holidays. You need an experienced, aggressive attorney in your corner, and the team at Kevin Hickey Law is there to represent you through the whole process. They've seen it all. They've dealt with it all. So whatever your situation is, they're experienced, caring individuals that can step in and aggressively represent your interest. Kevin has locations in the River Valley and Fort Smith, also in Northwest Arkansas as well. 434-2414 in the River Valley or 479-802-6560 in Northwest Arkansas. Find those phone numbers and more online at kevinhickeylaw.com. That's kevinhickeylaw.com.
If you want to get in the conversation, call or text the Cherokee Casino Hotline at 877-377-6963. I know that since there's so many college football games going on this weekend, we're going to talk a lot about those as well. But, you know, as far as a Power 5 game, if you will, or especially an SEC game, if you will, that's going on this weekend, it's unfortunate that perhaps the most least interesting or the least interesting game, I should say, of all of them is going to be Arkansas and Missouri. Because not only do you have Arkansas, which we know all about what their struggles have been, but Missouri sitting at 5-6, they're not playing into a bowl game because the NCAA upheld their postseason ban. So this is their last game of the season no matter what. So essentially, when you again, we talk about games of consequence and what it could mean, Arkansas and Missouri really has nothing. I mean, there's nothing that's going to be about this game. The only thing that you could probably take from it, and it's more from the Arkansas side, is, you know, could this team, and one final gasp effort, and one final game, be able to just put it together somehow, some way, against a very beatable Missouri team in Little Rock to where they can end the SEC game losing streak. They can put a nice little, even if it's just a silver lining of a wrapper, but still just a nice little end to an awful season, perhaps the worst type of season you could ever have in Arkansas football history. Could they find a way to put it all together for 4 quarters and get out of there with a victory? It's not going to be easy. I don't see it happening, but I mean, it's going to come down to what's this team's motivation, you know, and can they keep from getting in their own way, and can they keep from not only when they make the mistakes, but letting that dictate the rest of your game and the rest of the way you play? I mean, these are going to be the questions today. I just don't know if it's going to be enough.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, it's about setting the tone for the offseason. Yeah, you're going to have a new coach, and that's going to change the narrative on a lot of things, but you know, going into the offseason with a win versus having that loss and another 2-win season hanging on. I know 3 wins versus 2 isn't a heck of a lot of difference, but there's something about the taste in your mouth just ending the season on a victory, even though it's not a bowl game, that's just a lot different for the months ahead than losing this game and having to live with yet another loss and, you know, the reality of a 2-win season.
And just imagine.
I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
What if they win and play well, Is Barry Lunny a candidate for the job?
I say no.
I think a secondary candidate. So.
And the only way I would say that he would even be a candidate is because everybody else told you no. Yeah. And that's nothing against Barry Lunny Jr. That's nothing against his coaching ability. He could end up being a guy who works back his way into the ranks and becomes a great coordinator, maybe even turns into becoming a great head coach. But, you know, the thing is that he's just – this is such an important hire, man. We know that this is arguably the most important hire in Razorback football history, and I just don't know if Hunter Yurecek can risk that on a guy who's never been a head coach, who's never even been a coordinator, who has a lot of Arkansas ties, but I just don't know if that would be that resume would be enough to make sure you got this right. So, and again, that's nothing against Barry Lund Jr. He could end up being a fantastic head coach one day. I just don't think right now is the time you want to make that hire.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
We have just a couple, again, this is going to be a special edition of the Morning Rush, where we have, of course, this 8 o'clock hour and the 9 o'clock hour, and then we will go from 10 to 10:30. Bringing you right into the IMG pregame. So this is just kind of what happens on the Black Friday. I think we did this the same setup last year, Tommy.
Yeah, we've done this a while because Arkansas plays at 1:30, so there's no sense in leaving you at 9 o'clock. So we're just going to stay with you till and let us sleep in another hour today. So we're going to stay with you through 10:30 this morning here on HitThatLine.com and ESPN Arkansas.
Yeah, and let me ask you this, Tommy, because, you know, this has always been something where Arkansas and the opponent that they played, you know, forever is LSU. They always played LSU at the end of the season. We all know how much we'd love to still have that, but it doesn't look like it's going to be happening anytime soon. You got Missouri. But are you still partial to playing the game the day after Thanksgiving, or do you kind of wish it was on Saturday?
I like the game from a professional and personal standpoint, from what we do and – For the work we do and for just me being able to watch football on Saturday with no responsibilities, I like the Friday game. Okay. But it's just totally selfish why I like the Friday game. Because I can get up and come in here on Friday, we can do our work, and then Saturday I don't have to answer to anyone. That's why I like it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Because, let's be honest. It's always great to where you can open up your entire schedule on one particular day, and in this case, Saturday, where that's where the majority of the great football games are going to be played. Yeah. And you can just watch it from beginning to end.
Yeah. It's one less day I got to talk to you. So, I mean, it's wonderful. Yeah. You know.
That's true, too. You got to look at all the silver linings.
It's all selfish reasons. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. But then it's like, you know, you see a game like yesterday when the Iron Bowl, they have it on Thanksgiving, which I don't want that.
The Egg Bowl.
I don't want to have a game. Yeah, or yeah,
you
the
said
Egg
Iron Bowl.
TV,
you meant Egg Bowl. Yeah.
Egg Bowl,
think
Iron
about
Bowl,
the turnaround
matter.
There. I mean, you're playing the previous Saturday, then you turn around, you got to do it again in 4 days. I mean, there's no time to practice. There's no time to prep for the game that really means the most to your season. You know, winning that game can right a lot of wrongs, can cover a lot of sins for either Ole Miss or Mississippi State. And last night, Joe Moorhead, I don't care, you know, if he loses that game last night, he may end up being somewhere else. That's actually good news for Arkansas that Joe Moorhead is, you know, and he's declared, this is my team, you're going to have to, what did he say? You're going to have to drag my Yankee bleep out of this state or out of Starkville or something to that effect was his quote after the game last night. I don't think he's leaving and going anywhere if he truly meant the words he said. Ole Miss, do they look to make a coaching change after what happened last night? Probably not. But you know that you don't. What you want as Arkansas going through a coaching search is to be the only SEC school trying to hire a coach this year. So it's amazing what that game can mean and how the fortunes can change in the Egg Bowl last night.
Exactly right. It's just a simple thing like what you saw with the celebration ended up costing Ole Miss the game. I mean, which was fantastic. You know, we love that. But it's amazing just something as simple as that could have so much significance on what futures could held for not only the programs and the teams, but for the coaches that were coaching that team. Because, you know, if Matt Luke ends up winning that game with Ole Miss, And so I'm not saying he was going to for sure get fired, but I don't think that there's any way you fire him if he ended up beating Mississippi State, finishing 5-7 instead. So, yeah, it's just amazing how things can change, how fortunes can change just for a simple play and a simple game like that. So, you know, it's just crazy that, you know, like you said, the game that means the most to you, you have the quick turnaround of 4 days, and, you know, it all comes down to that one. It's just never going to be like that for Arkansas. And I know we've talked about this. Sports Talk Radio 101 in the state of Arkansas is when you talk about, you know, who's your rival, what's your rival, what's the significance of the final game of the season. And Tommy, this game against Missouri, I know they have a nice little cute trophy. I know that they try to pump it up the best way that they can. But, and I know this game is even going to be on CBS today. But it is not. It's not a rivalry game. And the only reason that it may ever have any sort of significance is just because it's the final game of the season. Not because of who you're playing, but when you play them is what's only going to be the significance. Because, you know, when it was Arkansas and LSU, for instance, that was always the thing brought up, that for many years it was a game of significance because if you ended up winning it, in a lot of cases, the winner of that ended up going to the SEC championship game and winning the West. Now, it wasn't because it was LSU necessarily. It was because it was your final game of the season, your final SEC game of the season, and you had to win it. It could have been against different opponents as well. And when you're both having something riding on the game, it makes it a lot more intense for both teams, which is understandable. Yeah. But with Arkansas and Missouri, since they're in separate divisions, they're not exactly in places where their programs want to be right now. And the fact that they were kind of forced into this where neither of them really wanted it, and especially Arkansas fans did not want to lose that game against LSU in the last game of the season, is kind of just always going to be looked at as, well, and just another game, just another SEC game that just happens to be the last game of the season.
It all got messed up, of course, when those two teams joined the league, but you look around the rest of the league, and LSU and Arkansas never had dance partners, so they became dance partners because, you know, Tennessee plays Vanderbilt, Ole Miss plays Mississippi State, Auburn plays Alabama, Georgia plays Georgia Tech, I mean, South Carolina plays Clemson, Kentucky plays Louisville. I mean, you just keep going through the list of SEC schools, and they either have a natural geographic rival in-state for a non-conference game, or there's a great in-state rival, and the best amongst them all is the Iron Bowl in Auburn, Alabama. You know, but you just look around the league, and you know, who's left without a dance partner? Well, Arkansas is one of those teams. Now, Missouri could play Kansas at the end of the year, even though it'd be a non-conference game, but they don't want to do that. Texas and Texas A&M really don't work at the end of the year because of Texas' need to play a Big 12 game and perhaps now under their new way qualify for that. So it just really leaves everything messed up because LSU doesn't have an in-state rival to play. They don't have a game. That's why the Arkansas game was always just there for both schools. It just, they were the last two left on the list. And now with A&M in here, it just kind of messes everything up. So who else could Arkansas play at the end? Well, you need Missouri to either play somebody else. And I don't know that Arkansas would ever get back to playing LSU at the end of the year. Really, for me and my money, if I could just wave the magic wand, Arkansas plays Texas A&M last game of the year. That's the way it truly should be.
Yeah, I have been advocating that for a long time, and I've even said and has gone far to say that if Arkansas was going to have a rival, which I'm not saying you for sure need to, because again, rival needs to be organic. It needs to be something that's not forced into the season like we've seen with Arkansas and LSU and Arkansas and Missouri. But organically and historically, it would make sense for A&M to do it. The only problem is, and this is not saying that it needs to be this way, but this is how they view it, A&M, they don't care about Arkansas being at the last game of the season. They feel like they're above Arkansas right now, at least, so they would want to play LSU. And, you know, it would be almost perfect to where you had that game and you knew what was riding on it. They're division rivals, so who knows what the future would hold. Maybe there would be times where the West would be on the line for the Arkansas A&M game at some point in time. It doesn't look like anytime soon. But still, it would just be nice to have that game, set up. And I think there would be a lot more people outside of the state of Arkansas and outside even especially the state of Texas that would be interested in that game more so than Arkansas and Missouri.
There's just, you know, it still boils down to what do TV executives want? And ultimately, the people in charge of selecting games would rather have the markets in the state of Texas and the markets that LSU brings, with New Orleans chief amongst them, but other southern football markets that would be more inclined to watch an LSU game than Arkansas play. Arkansas just doesn't bring the TV markets to the table on a big holiday weekend the way LSU and A&M does. So whether you like it or not, a lot of this thing comes down to simple metrics and simple equations of what games can rate the best, because ratings are what sell advertising, and advertising is what makes the money for these $40 million checks for each SEC member, advertising and subscriptions. So at the end of the day, Arkansas is always going to have an uphill battle in these kind of deals in football, because you just don't have as many eyeballs to bring to the TV. And it's just a sad reality that we have to face. And then once you get back to your, if you have a consistent winning tradition, you have more of a national appeal, a national brand across the southern states to bring more to the TV. It's John, at the end of the day, TV executives are trying to keep their jobs too, and they're trying to put the best games on, and they have that kind of influence with the league to set the schedule that way.
And which is understandable. I get it. And I know people always throw up their arms and get frustrated, especially if you're Arkansas, because you see it as some sort of sign of disrespect. But at the end of the day, they got a job to do. They got to make the money. They got to put the games on the TV at the times when they do to make sure that they get the most eyeballs.
You want the $40 million or not? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. So there's a reason why it's all very intricate that way. But the fact of the matter is that if we had our druthers, if we were running in and if we were completely and totally looking at Arkansas first and making them the priority, playing A&M the day after Thanksgiving would be the way you'd want to have it done. But unfortunately, again, I don't see it changing, because I don't think A&M nor LSU is going to give up that. Because, Tommy, you know that LSU would rather play A&M than Arkansas. And I'm sure A&M would rather play LSU than Arkansas. So this seems like unless they do some sort of expansion to where they get another team that's in the West, that's maybe another team in Texas or Oklahoma or whatever, that they end up making those matches made in heaven. But I just don't see it changing. So I guess we're just going to have to get used to the fact that you're going to play Missouri at the end of the season for the foreseeable future, and so you might as well just try to make the best of it.
Yeah. Hey, folks at Crabtree RV want to say thank you. For the fourth consecutive year, you voted them the best place to buy an RV. They're showing their appreciation right now with their Christmas Cash Day sale. It's now through New Year's Eve. Sales tax paid or $1,000 in Christmas cash on the purchase of any RV from Crabtree RV in Alma, and they'll still give you the most for your trade. The best deals of the year are happening now at Crabtree RV in Alma. It's where your family's dreams come true. You know, John, one way to change it, to make it feel more of a rivalry, is to have this game mean something. You know, and I think it simply starts with Arkansas trying to play their way back to being bowl eligible. Maybe this game is the one where Arkansas has to win next year to become bowl eligible. These games have to have something on the line. That would be the least amount that you'd want. But at some point, maybe Missouri and Arkansas, one's trying to knock each other out of an appearance in Atlanta, or a share of a conference title, or stepping up to the next bowl level. At some point, for this game to have some significance, both teams need to be good at the same time and playing for something that matters. Because geography and the fact that the state's border hasn't really become much of a rivalry yet. You got to get to a point, and I think there is more to this than people recognize, where there's recruiting battles in both states. You know, Auburn and Alabama battle each other 365 days a year, and their battles are over recruiting as much as it is on the field in the Iron Bowl tomorrow. So, you know, things like that have to become more of a rivalry where, you know, you're battling in recruiting, you're battling on the field, you're battling in all three sports that the people pay the most attention to, and then this thing can go somewhere when you finally get a football game with something significant on the line in it.
Yeah, because you're also just going to have good timing, right, with what both teams are doing during that respective season. Because let's be honest, Arkansas, especially right now in the West, they're not going to be competing for the West anytime soon. Now, not to say that 5-10 years down the road, maybe they're in the conversation, but they're not going to be consistently at this point. And it's almost the same way with Missouri in the East. Because right now you got Georgia, you got Florida. I know that other teams like Tennessee are down, and maybe South Carolina's average, and maybe Missouri could find their way into that third spot. But it's going to take a lot for them and Missouri to be able to consistently compete in the East for the foreseeable future, because it looks like Georgia and Florida really have it going. And as far as the type of players that they get in, those two programs are always going to get much more elite players year in and year out than what Missouri's going to get. So it's always going to be a little difficult to say that Missouri could compete. So if neither of these teams can compete consistently in their respective divisions, that means that you're going to have to get the timing right where both teams are competing for their division in the same year. Yeah, and I just that to me is going to be what's going to be the most difficult thing in this whole deal, is because it's one thing to say, well, 1 year Missouri, like, and what we've seen when they first joined the conference, it is the year 2 and 3 of being in the SEC. They won the East, they played Arkansas in that third one, but Arkansas wasn't playing for anything. They had a bad season. So for Missouri, it was worth something, but for Arkansas, didn't have the same meaning. So it's about getting the timing right too. That's going to be able to build that into something and then find the consistency. My hope is that, because listen, again, I don't think that there has to be a rival for Arkansas. I said, listen, it's fine. If you don't have a rival, just hate all the other teams equally. If that's going to be the way you're going to do, just hate them all equally. But if people actually want this to turn into something, they actually want it to be a rivalry, they want it to be something that turns into where year in and year out, that's the game you circle on your schedule to make sure it's like, okay, you got to win that game. If you want that, you're going to have to start buying into the game itself. You're going to have to start having some chippiness. You're going to have to start having some trash talk. You're going to have to start having some other elements that are going to go into it. I know Eric Bizell, I believe was what his name a couple years ago, you know, he started trash talking a little bit for Arkansas. What'd that do? Nothing. Because here we are talking about it, because then you have the punter slash the punter kicker there from Missouri who was interviewed this past week, was talking about Arkansas, and he's like, this is just another game, another SEC game. It's not to say that it's not important because it's an SEC game itself, but it's just nothing special. And I think that that's what it's reverted back to. So even though they tried it, it didn't really work out, and there's just not that element of hatred or angst towards each other at this point.
Yeah. You know, you've had a few – Doriel Green Beckham that went there and not Arkansas is down to the last two. Recently with Kelly Bryant. I'm not sure if Arkansas was his number two or not, but he chose Missouri, which has turned out to be one of the most overhyped, overrated things ever, was Kelly Bryant's, air quotes, free agency tour last year. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, what has he really done for Missouri? Not a whole lot. And, you know, so those kind of things add a little kindling to the fire, if you will. So hopefully, you know, this series will, the thing it's missing is games on the field that mean something. Now, Arkansas's had some big leads and blown it. Arkansas has not been very successful in this conference series, and Missouri leads the all-time series. These are just two teams that haven't played a whole heck of a lot in the lifetime of each school. So it's just going to take time. These things are born over decades and mature over decades, not over the course of a few seasons.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's not required. Like, I felt like the whole trophy thing was just a forced thing. And it just makes it almost where people don't want it to be because it seems so forced. And you don't want to be forced into anything, a forced marriage into anything. But I'm telling you right now, if Arkansas, say, won this game today, though, I'm not saying that it would spurt into any sort of rivalry, but it would definitely hurt. Yeah. It would hurt Missouri if Arkansas won this game today. It won't hurt Arkansas if Missouri wins, but it would hurt Missouri. It would hurt Barry Odom. Who knows if he would be back next year if he ended up losing? Because let's be honest, Tommy, if you lose to Arkansas this season, especially given the circumstances and especially given who will probably be the starting quarterback, which is Jack Lindsey, nothing against the kid, but you know he's not exactly an all-SEC caliber quarterback. If you lose to Arkansas like that, it's a fireable offense, really, at this point in time. So it could get really nasty for Missouri if they ended up winning. So maybe that would spurn something. Yeah. I don't know.
There's some motivation.
Yeah. Just don't lose to Arkansas, because then you'll basically have to shut your program down.
Hey, is your home in Arkansas at least 10 years old and served by OG&E? Right now they're offering a free weatherization program to increase your comfort and lower your bills. A trained crew will perform an energy audit at no cost to you. And if your home qualifies, crews will install measures that include attic insulation, LED light bulbs, weather stripping around doors and windows, advanced power strips, smoke alarms, carbon monoxide detectors, and a whole lot more. And it's all absolutely free to qualifying homes. Call 1-800-272-9741. That's 1-800-272-9741 for OG&E's free home weatherization program.
You know, it's another funny thing too, Tommy, when we're talking about this game, it would also, of course, significance and all that would be helpful, but also the games that these teams have played have not been really good. None of them. I mean, the first time they played Missouri joined the SEC was, I guess, back in 2014 when they played at Missouri. Missouri was number 17 in the country. Arkansas lost 21-14, so that was a close game, but every other game has just been kind of terrible. You had the game in 2015 in Fayetteville that was wet and miserable in Missouri. They didn't have – Gary Pinkle was on his way out. That was a mess even though Arkansas won. The next year was when Missouri was just atrocious, but they ended up coming back on Arkansas and winning at the end. I know it was a good game for Missouri, but still not a good game between those two teams. And then the next year in Fayetteville is a shootout. Missouri gets the victory 48-45. Last year, 38-0. I mean, there's just also been not very good games or games that where it was much watched TV too. So who knows? Maybe that'll be something that can change today. Maybe today will be a great game. Although, for some reason, I highly doubt it. I highly doubt it.
Well, not going to, you know, sometimes you get these games like we saw last night with the Egg Bowl, two mediocre to less than mediocre teams, and you have a great contest between the two because it's evenly matched. I don't know if Arkansas can evenly match today. I worry and wonder about, you know, that they sent the press release out about the mumps being a problem on campus. Has it affected Arkansas's lineup? How many starters could perhaps not see action today? How many significant players might be out? It's a short week. There's not a lot of time for a ton of preparation this week. You got to travel the team to Little Rock. You're hoping Arkansas is ready to put on the best that they can put on today against Missouri for this final game of the year.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Got Arkansas, Missouri coming up at 1:30 today. It's the final game of the season for the Arkansas Razorbacks. And after that will become the biggest question of what happens then.
Yeah.
What happens with Arkansas and the coaching search. And it becomes almost not necessarily as much as who, but as when. How long are we going to have to wait until Arkansas names a coach? Is it going to be Sunday? Or is it going to be a week from Sunday? How long is it going to be?
Well, if I had to guess, I'd say somewhere between the 3rd and the 6th, you know, of December would be when I would expect something to happen. Games are still being played through tomorrow. Maybe some real movement begins to happen on December 1st and 2nd. That's Sunday and Monday. I don't, you know, you'd like to maybe have a coach name because it's never the announcement. I mean, everybody thinks that, you know, you wait and then at the press conference, the world will know. Well, the world's going to know 24 to 48 hours before that press conference. So you would like to, you know, to probably maybe learn something that's a little more concrete by Tuesday, Wednesday, and maybe have a press conference Thursday, Friday. Because whoever it's going to be, that would be the ideal thing. Because the early signing period is December 18th. You know, that's, you know, let's see, less than 3 weeks away. So you got to get with it here. Now, I'm not saying that's why you should go with one coach versus the other. Maybe the better coach is a week's wait, and you wait a week. But, you know, this is going to be a thrown-together class anyway. We talked about this with Chuck Barrett last, it wasn't last week. It was on Wednesday. And, you know, that's really one of the things that people aren't accounting for as much as you've had six coaches in 14 years, but in the last handful of years, John, you've had thrown-together classes. You know, this class is going to be a thrown-together class because no coach and leading through the transition. Then you've got, and then the recruiting effort's gone. When Chad Morris took over in his first year, he got some players, but it was a thrown-together class. You know, when you have transition, you lose a recruiting class. And, you know, that's really what's hurting Arkansas. You got 3 years of it that's just kind of wadded up on you here right now, and that's why the line play it is what it is, and that's why you've been deficient with depth on this team is you've missed too many recruiting classes.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, Tommy, that like I'm still wrong in my synopsis that Hunter Yurcheck already has his man? Like, already not signed, sealed, and delivered, but at least whether it's a verbal confirmation, whatever it is, that he has his man, it's already done. Now it's just waiting for everything to settle down to where they can make the move.
I think he knows where he wants to go. I think he knows what he wants to do. But, that you know, if you're going after a coach that's having success, that school isn't going to turn loose to that coach just easily. So, you know, rare is the day that a coach can leave a situation where that school isn't going to make a counter. Their agent isn't playing both sides against the middle. So does he probably have his, I want A, B, or C? Does he have a 1-2-3? I would, well, if not, what have you been doing the last few weeks? So, yeah, I think he's to that point. But does he have his man basically in his hip pocket? done deal, just waiting to ink it? No, I don't think that you're quite there yet.
No. And if he ends up being to where they make the hire this weekend, which, again, I would be shocked. I would be floored if that ended up being the case. But if they did, that would show me that they've had this done for quite some time now, and maybe that's why we didn't hear a lot about it. Maybe that's why you had Hunter Yurecek and John Fagg traveling a little bit with the women's basketball team going out to California, as well as the men's basketball team, where they didn't have you know, that 24/7, 365 mentality where it's like, okay, we just have to be working around the clock here on this coaching search. We can actually go out and fulfill our other responsibilities and our other duties.
I'd be in the Bahamas with the women's team now is what I'd be doing. So.
Yeah, I'd probably be doing that too. And, hey, do we know where Hunter Yurecek's at? Because for all we know, he might be.
I would imagine he's in Little Rock right now.
Yeah, that's what you hope he's doing, but you never know. But my point is that the earlier it gets hired obviously shows that the sooner they got moving on it. And it's just a matter of, you know, who's really behind the scenes working on this deal. Because in the basketball search, because that's what we have to compare it to when they hired Eric Musselman, and how it was explained and how it was reported, was that the Board of Trustees and Hunter Yurecek, of course, were getting together and talking about the candidates and all that. Hunter Yurecek knew who he wanted. He wanted Eric Musselman. He said, this is the guy. Guys, this is the one we want. And I'm not saying that there was a ton of resistance about Eric Musselman, but there was some board members that are saying, okay, well, what about we need to look at this guy, though. We need to look at Chris Beard. We need to just go out and offer him the farm and see if we can get him. We need to still wait on that. And Hunter Yurecek's like, okay. But this is still my guy. This is who I want. And eventually, rest is history, that you ended up having Eric Musselman as your new basketball coach. Hunter Yurecek ended up making the decision. Seems like it's the right decision so far. And that's all she wrote. I'm curious to see if it's going to be handled the same way, where Hunter Yurecek has his guy. He's like, this is the guy I want. I've done my research. I've done my study. I've done my interviewing. I've done my vetting. This is the guy I want. Is the Board of Trustees and saying, okay, but let's wait till Gus Malzahn gets done, or let's wait until this happens, and Yurecek sits back and says, okay, but I want this guy. And does Hunter Yurecek, whoever that one guy is, does he get that one guy? Does Hunter Yurecek get his wish? Do they maybe get him more of the benefit of the doubt because of how good of a hire Eric Musselman was? Do they give him that benefit? I'm not totally sure, but I'm going to be very curious to see kind of how the discussions have gone and who's doing what and who's saying what and how they're handling this whole situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much politics gets involved. Everybody that's in one of these positions, whether you're a board, you know, it's the chancellor, the foundation board, all these people, you know, want to interject their opinion into it because they feel like that's their duty or right because of the privileged position they're in. But at the end of the day, who's going to be held accountable for this hire? It's one person, maybe two. You can include the chancellor in this and Joseph Steinmetz, but it's ultimately the AD. And I'm going to tell you, I think if this hire doesn't work out, and there's already word that, you know, Joseph Steinmetz has planned his retirement, his exit at some point in the near future. But I think this is so critical, John, that the chancellor and the AD's jobs are on the line with what happens in this next football hire. I don't know that the current chancellor will be around to see the end of it, but certainly Hunter Yurecek is going to be held responsible for what happens with who they select as the football coach.
Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with you, because I said this, of course, at Thanksgiving, you always have these conversations. Everyone says avoid politics. Well, you know what my Thanksgiving dinner was like? I don't know if yours was the same way. It was always about who's the next football coach going to be. That was the main topic. And
until someone brought up politics.
Exactly. Then derailed the whole conversation. Yeah. But my point is that when they kept asking me about it, I'm like, listen, I don't know. I don't know who the next coach is going to be. I have options of people I think would be good. I have options of people I think they're actually talking to. I have options there. But the fact of the matter is that this is, without question, the most important hire in Razorback sports history.
I agree.
I truly believe that. And I know that I haven't been around on this earth for any more than 30 years. I understand that. And I understand that there's probably people that will disagree thinking that there was some other big-time hire as far as, you know, what it meant to the program. And that's not what I'm saying, because people say, well, Frank Broyles was the most important. Okay, yes. Yeah, in the grand scheme of things and what his impact was on the future of the program, of course it was. But they weren't sitting there, and of course, I don't know, again, I wasn't alive, but I doubt they were sitting there and saying, if we don't get this hire right before we hire Frank Broyles, then this is going to be essentially years upon years of irrelevancy in football for years to come. This is how it feels like right now. If you don't get, if you hire another Chad Morris, another Chad Morris 2.0, I don't know if the program can recover for years, for maybe even a decade, because you will be that far in the ditch. You've already been in the ditch for a while. And you've tried to make some adjustments. You made the firing of Brett Bielema, which thought that that would shore up a lot of the issues. You got rid of Jeff Long, which you thought would shore up a lot of the issues. But you brought in Chad Morris, and he made it worse. The football program, he made worse. And now you're sitting at it to where, because let's be honest, I mean, they're probably going to lose today. You're going to be sitting at, if you're Hunter Yurecek, you have a football program that's had back-to-back seasons of 2-10. You've had embarrassing moments after embarrassing moments. You've become popular and become viral for all the wrong reasons. You're the laughingstock of the conference. You are right now. Mm-hmm. You are. And you have to look at it and say, if I don't get somebody in here that not only gets energy into this program, but also coaches up the toughness, gets these guys ready to go as far as the guys we have on the team currently, that hits the ground recruiting, that has a lot of energy, that can really unite the fan base and excite everybody around. If I don't get that right, I don't know how there's going to be any sort of recovering from it all. And it's just unfortunate that Hunter Yurecek's in that position, because I don't think that, because pretty much most of this stuff was not his fault. It was not his doing. I'm not going to say everybody's completely, totally without blame, especially during the whole Chad Morris hire. I think he still had a say in it. But he understands that this is a mess he's having to clean up. He did a great job with the basketball hire. Can he do the same? Can he replicate that with football? I don't know, Tommy. Am I wrong for having too much trust in Hunter Yurecek, thinking that he's going to do it?
You're basing that all on the Musselman hire, though.
Correct.
You're not alone in that. I think, but that's all we have to go on. Here's what I also base my trust in Hunter Yurecek on. He didn't wait two more years, one more year, one more season, one more game to pull the trigger on making a change with Chad Morris. Mm-hmm. He could see by attending practices, being around the football operations building, being in press conferences, you know, he was at practices and really watching closely what his coach was doing. He understood a while back, this ain't the guy. This is not the guy that's going to be able to get Arkansas competitive again in the SEC. Hunter Yurecek's expectations that he told us, you know, the Monday after dismissing Chad Morris were very reasonable. Be competitive in SEC mm-hmm. games. He didn't say win your SEC games. Sure, that's implied. Be competitive. And he didn't sit and wait and say, well, maybe one more year. He saw what he saw. He came to a conclusion, and he acted upon it. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of outside pressure, I know. And it was an easy call, in my opinion. But sometimes the easy calls in life, we wait too long to make it then, and then it's worse. You know, so I commend him and have faith in him for being willing to pull the trigger and make what I don't think was a hard decision quickly and move on. And, yeah, we've had faith because he found Eric Musselman that he can do it again. But all of that can be lost with a bad hire here as well. So mm-hmm. he understands what's at stake here. He's been very clear about that, and I think he'll come through.
Well, and I do too. And here's the other thing, because I know we were comparing it, continuing with the Eric Musselman hire. When he made the decision to fire Mike Anderson, and he even said this in his press conference, he said that what he saw, even though Arkansas's basketball team, they had a winning record. They went to the NIT. They won a game in the NIT. It wasn't like it was a complete and total failure of a season. But the thing that he said that he saw from the team that he knew that changes had to be made was two different things. He said that he saw that the team was lacking toughness in order to compete, and especially in the SEC with the way things were going. And he also saw that there was not a plan in place that he felt like was going to be a successful plan for getting this back on track to get this team tough and ready for getting back to the NCAA tournament. He talked, he saw, he was in the way he looked at things, in the scope he looked at it. It wasn't just, well, what's your win-loss record? Oh, well, okay, another year. It wasn't as simple as that. He went in depth and was looking at certain particular things that through practices, through games, and he was like, I don't like that. I don't think that that's what's good enough to get you to where we need to be. And since I don't like that, I'm going to make the change. And I think that he probably did the same exact thing with football. Of course, you said it was an easy decision, which it absolutely was an easy decision.
Firing Mike Anderson was much more difficult a decision.
Without question.
But 100 times harder.
Not only did he see the two wins, but he also was able to see that I think he even said it when the Barry Lenny press conference happened, that he had players on that team that started looking at Saturdays no longer as a privilege, no longer as something to look forward to. They saw it as a burden.
Yeah.
They saw it as something that they didn't. And he's like, that cannot happen. And there's no coming back from that with this coach. I have to make a change. So the scope of how he looks at things is more than just wins and losses. He looks at the actual mentality. He looks at the attitude. He looks at what's going on in that locker room. And that's something that we can't see as fans and as media members. We can't see that, but he can. And so that's where my trust comes in him, because he sees it in a way that we can't. And he made the right decision, I believe, with the firing of Chad Morris and the timing of the firing of Chad Morris as well.
But you mess this one up, that's all out the window. Everything you just said is accurate. It's nice, and it makes you feel good about 100 yard check. But all of that's out the window if he doesn't get this one right. Period.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I absolutely
know. What's at stake here? And he knows that too.
Yeah. And the fact that he recognizes that is also where a lot of confidence can come from Razorback fans, because, hey, he knows. It's not like he's just coming in and being like, if I get it wrong, I get it wrong. You know, whatever. No, he fully understands that, hey, if I don't get this right, it's not only it could be bad for this program, but it's definitely going to be bad for me. And I can't allow that to happen. So
Frank Broyles made the decision to put Jack Crow in charge. He survived 15 more years. Because he had credit built up in the bank. You know,
exactly.
And that's – Hunter Yurcheck has – very little credit. I won't say none. He has very little credit, but not nearly enough to cover the debt it would create for him if this hire goes the wrong direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get into your SEC update here on The Morning Rush.
Somebody said we've got SEC bias. Deal with it. They're the best.
In the SEC, it just means more.
I know one thing. The SEC just got a little tougher.
This is your SEC update on The Morning Rush.
All right, it is time for your SEC update presented by Ozark Outpost Casual Clothing and Footwear.
Yeah, right now the Ozarks is keeping Fridays red, white, and blue with this Friday, Saturday, Sunday sale at the Ozarks. No Black Friday there. It's the red, white, and blue sale at Ozark Sportsman Supply and Ozark Outpost Casual Clothing and Footwear. Red hot deals that will have your white Christmas not singing the blues. All camping items right now, at least 20% off. Camo, 40% off. Fishing, 20% off. All crossbows, 20% off this weekend. S&B 9mm ammo, $8.99. Let's see, compound bows, $100 to $250 off. All safes are $200 to $600 off. And 10 to 75% off storewide at Ozark Outpost Clothing and Footwear. There's something for everyone this holiday season at the Ozarks. Ozark Outpost Casual Clothing and Footwear and Ozark Sportsman Supply. Highway 412 West, barely out of Springdale in Taneytown.
So for your SEC update, of course, the best SEC update I can ever start off with, and of course, last night in the Egg Bowl, you had Mississippi State get the victory over Ole Miss 21-20, and it was more than just a final score. It was more than just a good game between two rival teams. Tommy, Ole Miss lost this game literally because their wide receiver scored a touchdown that was going to tie up the game, and then he went into the end zone on all fours like a dog and then lifted his leg and impersonated himself of urinating like a dog. Got a flag. They had to back up the extra point. The kicker misses the extra point. Ole Miss loses by final score 21-20. Outstanding.
Is there a more embarrassing, hilarious, talked about way to lose than what happened? And listen, the extra point would have tied the game just to send it most likely to an overtime. There's no guarantee Ole Miss was going to win the game, but when he did that, he guaranteed Ole Miss wasn't going to win the game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And what a selfish act by that player. And as you pointed out earlier, how does his coaching staff allow him, how does Matt Luka allow him to come back out and be a part of the hands team for the onside kick? That's an immediate... You, as the coach, you put your arm around and you point to the locker room and you say, get out of here. You know, mm-hmm. Not that he's off the team, but you got to signal to the rest of the team, to your fan base, to your administration, that kind of selfishness, that kind of unsporting act. While I think it's funny and it certainly deserves a fight, I think the outcome is funny. I didn't think the act was funny. You got to send a strong message. And to send him right back out on the field really didn't achieve that.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely and totally agree. My thing is, Tommy, is we've watched a lot of college football in our day. We've watched a lot of football, period, in our day. And maybe we're just living in the moment. But can you think of another ending to a game that has been that's more ridiculous than that, though? Like, I know, because as far as stuff that didn't happen, I know it happened on the field, but something that didn't have to do with a crazy play. It was just an incredible decision made by an individual player, especially to do something like that.
Well, I mean, who was that? Was it Terrell Owens? Who was the player that did that? I mean, that wasn't the first time you've seen a it was an NFL wide receiver that did that too. Hiked his leg up and got it, but it wasn't at the end of the game and cost him his team. Maybe someone will text us in. I just remember it happening once before. But the only thing that I can think of where a player just went brain dead, had a boneheaded moment. I mean, I guess to me the one that comes to mind would be Leon Lett in that snow game with who was it, the Dolphins? We went after the football near the goal line. No need to do that.
I believe so, yeah.
So that was in the old Texas Stadium.
By the way, Tommy, Dudley Dawson just texted and says Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham, so, okay.
Yeah, thank you, Dudley. That was one lifting his leg. Yeah, so he wasn't the only one that's done it.
Yeah, but that didn't cost the team the game. That just cost him some
money. Right.
And you know what? If this happens last night and Ole Miss was up 35-14, and it was only going to penalize on a meaningless kickoff or something, this was a bonus score or something of that nature, that'd be a whole different narrative. But this, you can't do that when it could cost your team the game.
That's just a lack of discipline by the Ole Miss team.
Man. We've seen it before where players are celebrating heading to the goal line, and they spike the ball earlier, they wave the ball out, and it gets knocked loose short of the goal line, and they go review it. No, that's not a touchdown. I put this kind of in that same bucket with individual acts of showmanship, of look at me, put me on Twitter, put me on, what else? You know, it's not Facebook's not what they're after anymore, but whatever other, Instagram, whatever, Guess it's Snapchat for these guys, probably TikTok, whatever.
TikTok.
Someone asked my kids what I should be saying right now. It's these individual acts of selfishness, the look at me moment, and it cost everyone, it's not just the players on that roster, it's the coaching staff, it's the support staff, and as we're going to see in Fayetteville, when a coach gets fired, everybody gets fired.
That's right.
And when acts like that happen, it adds to the loss total, and eventually it leads to you losing your football, your head coaching job, and it's just stuff like that that signals to everybody else that this guy doesn't maybe have the control over the program he needs.
Yeah, and Robert and Van Buren texted this in, and I was thinking the same thing when it happened. The only thing I could maybe relate it to, and again, it had nothing to, it was not as effective when it came to the end of the game. But remember when Randy Moss acted like he mooned the crowd? I mean, that was
on Joe Buck. Flagged. That's a disgusting act.
Display. Yeah, like, oh, get over yourself, whatever. But even that was like, I still don't think that was as ridiculous because this was like, he had to pre-plan that, man. Like, I understand I'm not saying it should have been warranted, but if he would have spiked the ball, in celebration, I'm not saying it's right, but I would have been like, the emotions get you. You get excited about a particular play. It happens.
But that's exuberance.
Exactly.
That's not what you had with this.
This is something that I can only imagine that Elijah Moore was saying, if I score a touchdown, I'm going to walk on all fours and do this. Yeah. Like, he had to have that already set in stone that this is what I'm going to do if I score. The only problem was, like you said, Tom, you do that in the second quarter, it's bad. It's stupid. But you do it with just a few seconds left, it kills everything that you just had. And I know Mississippi State's thankful because that's what put them in a bowl game this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, I'm not going to feel bad for Ole Miss, though. If that's what someone wants is sympathy for Ole Miss, go look somewhere else. I have none. I have none to offer.
Yeah. I'm not dealing with it either, man. I'm over it. I'm loving it, though, but I'm over Ole Miss being good. I love them when they're being down and being bad.
Yeah. And it gave Mississippi State a bowl berth. I mean, you think about all the money that shifted on that. Hundreds of thousands of dollars,
My goodness.
I mean, Ole Miss wasn't going to make a bowl game, but Mississippi State's now in a bowl game.
All because of that.
That's
because of that.
They're going to get into $1 million bowl game because someone took a fake pee on a field.
Ain't America
think
great.
Think about it.
I know, man. College football never ceases to amaze me.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.